Back to the 144th Psalm. Tonight, just a bit of review. Of course, David wanted continued deliverance and rescue from the great flood of his enemies, from the heathen, from unrighteous people. Saw that in numerous references. And one of the characteristics that reveal the nature of the strange children, the great waters that he referred to in verse 7, which is a metaphor for the unrighteous heathens, is that their mouths, verse 8, speaketh, that's a present tense verb, continuously speaks vanity, emptiness. Their right hand is a right hand of falsehood. They're just liars. It's nothing that they say, nothing that they do is right at all. And I had mentioned that you find these kinds of people even professing to know the Lord. I mean, Saul was a classic example of a man who constantly used the Lord's name to attempt to justify behavior which was not possibly of the Lord at all. But he did that. But it was the people's fault because they chose him over God, and God judged and chastened Israel because of their choosing of this wicked man. We looked at Psalm 12, and I want to go back there again because it just struck me. It just struck me so clearly as to the nature of these men and the nature of the kinds of people that Israel became during times of apostasy. And even during that time, David wanted deliverance. He said, "Help, Lord, for the godly man ceaseth, for the faithful fail from among the children of men. They speak vanity, everyone with his neighbor, with flattering lips and with a double heart." Do they speak? A double heart. That's really interesting, because you really can't trust them. I think one of the greatest values that a person can possess is trustworthiness. I find it's very interesting how, and it's typical what he said in verse 2, how it's very difficult to trust people. It's said that you meaning we in general, have to have that kind of mentality, but the fact is that many people have a double heart. You don't know what to believe about them. The issue is they're not real. They're not real at all. They are duplicitous of heart. And that's really sad that we live in that kind of age too. And just as it was in David's age here in Psalm 12 and in Psalm 144, we see the scarcity of the faithful man or woman, even in the church. We also examined a couple of weeks ago the conditions of Israel during the time periods of their apostasy and the church age today. And rather than seeing a clear distinction between the apostasy that Israel was under during David's day and the contrast of faithfulness in the church, we actually see a parallel. We see something that is very, very common among both groups. Self-rulership, we saw Israel's condition, and then we applied it, or should we say compared it, to the church today. Israel had self-rulership. They didn't want God to rule over them. And back in the 80s, proper, you had this just this deluge of psychology that, which was perpetrated upon a biblically illiterate church. If the church stays biblically illiterate, she opens herself up to everything. There's no end. There's no restriction to the maniacal choosing of doctrines and teachings that she will follow as long as she keeps that Bible closed. I used to think that even as dumb as the church could be, there was a limitation to how dumb she would get. But I've come to know that there are no limitations to what people will believe and follow once they set aside their Bibles. And you can prove that by looking at Israel. What did Israel do when they set aside God and the prophets? They wound up killing their own children. I mean, you would think that a people that have had a heritage of God wouldn't even consider doing it. Don't ever underestimate what people will do in days of apostasy. And I have heard many cases from the news of religious people killing their children in this country. Don't be surprised what people will do when they set aside their Bibles and pursue self. So we look at the church age, it's the same thing. Everyone is interested in being selfish. And no matter how many bombs and bullets and bazookas I fired in the 80s against this nonsense, it was too deep. I mean, I'm one person in a location. My outreach is limited. And, you know, there's all kinds of, I guess, obstacles in the way. You know, I'm in the midst of a state religiously where there are famous people who promote this nonsense. And here I am, some sore thumb going in the complete opposite direction, going, this stuff is garbage. Now, who are they going to listen to? They're not going to listen to me. They're going to listen to their favorite Yahoo. Okay, that's fine. You know, so those obstacles were there. And I just kept putting it out, and a few others, that this stuff is going to come back to haunt the church. And the tentacles reach real deep, and the roots reach real deep, and the church began to accept it because it appealed to the ignorance, the biblically illiterate side of the church. And so those tentacles reached deep, and it expanded to the children, and now you can't even tell the children apart from the world anymore, because what we have learned through self-rulership, we have given to our children as a heritage. That's what we gave them. We didn't give them God as heirs. You gave them self-rulership. And so they become independent and snotty and selfish. The Bible addresses that very thing. The horse leech has two sisters. Give, give. It talks about the haughtiness and the selfishness of our youth, of that youth in his day, Solomon's day. The Bible addresses all this stuff. The haughtiness, how lofty are their eyelids. That's the result of self-rulership. If you want to give people their own rule of their own lives, and it's worse if you profess to know the Lord, because it's one thing to be selfish and not know the Lord. That's bad enough. But when you're selfish, you are sinning directly against God and the knowledge of God. And you know he doesn't care for that stuff. So it's almost like you're double sinning. And it's far worse for the professing whatever to do that. And as a result of self being on the throne and Christ off the throne, I kind of chuckle at this in my mind, because I'm thinking, I remember the time that four spiritual laws nonsense came out, and everyone was saying, well, self and Jesus is in the same little circle. It's garbage. It's garbage. Jesus said, deny yourself. If you don't deny yourself, you can't even be a disciple. He's not sitting in the same room as you. You're in that room by yourself. He's not there. So if you're selfish, you're going to choose everything that's, well, prone to self. And that means selfish or self-rulers. Selfish rulers are the result of self-rulership. So you're going to pick people who are like you. Worst thing can happen is a church picks its own rulers. They're going to pick people just like themselves. And we talked about rejection of God, that the people's choosing of God was a choosing of Saul, rather, was a total rejection of God to rule them. warned of God through Samuel, his prophet, that the people did respect not to choose this man. And God listed the things through Samuel, tell him this is what's going to happen. So, and Samuel gave them a list, what Saul's going to do. They said, we don't care. Really, they didn't even address it. We want a man like the other nations. They wanted to be worldly, like the other people around them. Church done the same thing. They rejected the rule of Christ over them, and she began to follow, well, everybody, good, bad, or indifferent. And following a Christian leader is no different than following an idol. It's idolatry either way. And when I mean follow them, I mean that you set aside God and you make them or him or her or whatever the object of where you get your truth. Well, Dr. So-and-so says, that's really notorious out here in California because it's all about self and the best teacher, the best schools, the best churches, the best, the highest, the arrogant, whatever. I don't come from California. And I do come from New York, which is probably worse in terms of arrogance, but there's just something about California that really just rates it second to none in pride. This place is arrogant. The people who live in California, I was going to say, forgive me. Don't forgive me. You know who you are. This place is arrogant. The churches out here are stuck up and conceited and arrogant. Stuck in their ways, rejecting God and don't care about it. Amazing. If you had told me I would live long enough to see this, I'd have probably thought you were talking about the time period when the beast was around here. I'd say stuff, Antichrist had to be here, this kind of apostasy, and it nowhere near that time. Now, these people are just bent on destruction. They don't even care. They hold on to their idolatry, tooth and nail. They reject God. They don't want to hear anything about a Bible. You ask them simple biblical questions to defend their positions and views, and they won't. They refuse to do it. You teach verse by verse of the Bible, you get attacked by morons. They won't even defend their own error. I've been challenging people for decades. I want you to show me in the Bible where you can defend your positions. They can't do it, but they don't care because they're selfish. People do things to the family of God? Unbelievable. I'm stunned at how people treat each other in the state of California, and in a church in particular. Amazing. How these people choose leaders. It is a direct renunciation of God. And they don't care. They're worse than Israel, frankly. They continue to reject the Spirit of God. They continue to reject Christ. They don't want his lordship. They don't want his authority. They want to just keep doing what they want to do. And they find leaders like that. And they're popular. Oh, my goodness. Then I talked about idolatry, false and modified worship of God. The Jews deviated from God's prescribed mode of worship. I mean, come on. This is a no-brainer here. It's happened in the church for years. It's still happening. And it's not even abating. It seems like it's getting worse. And that whole phoniness is taken to the house, actually brought from the house to the so-called church. It's taken to the house. It goes to the job. It goes to the gym. It goes to the store. It goes everywhere. The faithful man has ceased from the land. The faithful woman too. The absence of faithful men was number five. Dependability was an all-time low in Israel because of the rejection of God. And frankly, rejection by the entire nation of God ruling over them. And as such, it was an open declaration that the amount of faithful men who were dedicated to God was slim and none. And when that happens, you have it becomes an open door for evil. It's an open declaration that sin is accepted and the leaders tolerate it. Sure they do. Fewer and fewer faithful men to God and of God. Numbers are decreasing. They're not increasing, they're decreasing. Clamoring after false teachers, their absurd teachings, coupled with the absolute rejection of true teachers and of the scriptures themselves, is the loudest and clearest message that there is a great decrease of faithful men who will attempt to lead the people of God. We don't want it. Neither do you. The congregations don't want it because they keep putting up fools, and I hear it all the time. They keep putting up fools and they complain about it. You put them there, shut up. They are a reflection of you. That's who they are. Then we went to verse 2 of Psalm 12. They speak vanity, every one with his neighbor, with flattering lips and with a double heart they do speak. The statement, a double heart, is, well, it's simple, yet it's interesting. It means a heart and a heart. That's what it means, a heart and a heart, which is a metaphor for duplicity of motives, will, and understanding. It's all one or the other. So they have two wills, a right and a wrong one. And they supposedly function in both. Okay? They have two understandings, right and wrong. Same function. Two motives, right and wrong. And they're content to think they can mesh both together. And that's okay. So they say one thing and mean something else, but that's acceptable with the heart and the heart. That's who you are. They hide their true feelings in their heart while they use smooth words and the false heart to hide their lies. Yep. You know, trying to make a comparison between Israel and the church is so simple. It's not even half the sweat gland to try to do it, because it's so obvious today the church is doing just that and then some. And I say that because you look at the church and you find there's no distinction. There's no distinction. It's just the church and the world are the same. People are more concerned that they take down a nativity scene than they are about knowing the truth. I don't care if they take every one of them idols away. I don't care about that garbage. That's nothing. Oh, Lord, have mercy on the big black preacher. He speaketh blasphemy. He really didn't mean, Lord, to say evil against the nativity. People just don't get it. It doesn't matter about some clay or glass or plastic figurines on your stupid front lawn. It matters whether the Christ child who is not on your lawn but in heaven rules your insignificant life. And we forgot that. That's biblical. So we're more, they're taking away prayer from school. Take it all away, please. Take it all. They want to take God you trust off the mighty. Take it off, because it isn't even true anyway. Take it all off. It's nonsense. Take all this nonsense away. Great. I applaud it. I look forward to removing every vestige of God. You know why? You know why? Because it's all hypocrisy anyway. I don't want Americans who hate God to think they trust in God. Take it all away. I think it's wonderful. We don't see things right. What is In God We Trust done on the money? I never heard of a person ever got saved or ever knew the Lord, ever sought God because he sought on a dollar bill. Prayer in schools? Okay. Great. What does it matter if you don't know the Lord? Teaching the Ten Commandments? Well, what happened to the other 603? Doesn't matter if you don't, if you teach those 10 and you don't teach anything else. Well, what good is it? You think there is more to the Bible than just 10 commandments? I think so. I understand the mentality of people. Take it all away, because I'm tired of hypocrisy being associated with God and America. Take it all away. Every bit of it. Take it off the money. Take it off the Supreme Court. They don't rule by God anyway. Take it off. Take it off every building. Federal, state, city, I could care less. Take it all off because I'm tired of watching this hypocrisy. The hypocrisy of God in America played out in front of our faces. Tired of it. Take it all off. Tired of people living this duplicity. And they do it in the church. Next was vanity, number six. See, now if you picked yourself up off the floor at this point, okay, all the sacred cows that I'm not even close to finished. All the sacred cows that people have trusted in for decades are now slaughtered and put in the oven. You know, and now people that fell off the floor throwing stuff at their computers or tried so hard to grab the mouse before their ears blow up because they're not used to hearing anyone say this. But if you think logically for maybe once or twice your whole insignificant life, you probably realize that it makes a lot of sense. Not to mention this stuff has to be in your heart anyway. And people will object. I object, big black preacher. And I tell you why. Israel had different markers where they were to remember God. They had stone piles here. They had rocks there. They had altars here. Right. What's your point? We in America, we need to have markers whereby, you know, we can be reminded of God. And so we need these idols and these words to remind us of God. Well, that assumes you're following him. The purpose of the markers, my dear friend, my dear ignorant friend, was to remind Israel not to forget God, but to worship God. So are you doing it? Because if you forgot him, it doesn't matter. You can have 1,000 stones of remembrance. Plus, I never seen that ever referred to the church. So what does it matter anyway? Because the tables of the law are written on the heart of the believer, not on so-called altars and buildings and dollars. We are the mark of God to a world. And we have failed in that mission as a whole. The church has. In this rotten state. People say, why do you live here? It wasn't my choice to come into this mess. I'm telling you earlier, my plan was to go to New York and to, you know, live up my hedonistic years in New York City and the house I grew up in. I had no intention of coming out in this rot hole. God put me here as a continued irritant. You ever get that pimple hair? Oh, I don't care where it is. Get a little bump, and there's a hair that grows, and it just irritates you. And you'd be scratching and bleeding, and you could dig, and then that hair won't come out. It's like the ingrown hair just grows, and you think about using that tweezer. I wouldn't do it. People be hollering. You can hear them across the street. I'm the irritant. It's not my intention of doing it. I'm a nice guy, sweet, lovable fuzzball. Would never intend to hurt people. It's not me. I would have never come here. I am here for one purpose, and that's it. Preach this word. I know people would be very happy if the big black spook would vanish. You know, I concur. There are a number of places in the world I think I'd love to end up going. But wherever I go, I'm going to do the same thing. So I'm sure people will be want me out. But I'm here. However long. Whatever. It's been an interesting experience. 32 years of being in this madhouse and counting. But Israel was given over to vanity. Vanity meaning nothing. Foolishness. Nothingness. Is it far-reaching to see how the church is given over to nothing? How she's placed so much importance in nothing? In nothing. Things that aren't even worth. There are things that you can really set your mind and heart on that are important. That really matter. Like family, friends, you know, being for real. The work of the Lord himself, etc. Things that are really important. How to be the best in your community. I mean, there are a list of things, of thousands of things people haven't even thought about that are important to that matter. Character, what have you, all these things are important. What do we give ourselves over to? Stupid nativity scenes and plastic babies and lights, and folks are getting killed over stupid lights. Let them take the doggone light. In fact, take them down yourself, throw them in the street. Is it worth your life to die over a $1.59 box of Kmart bulbs? This is insanity. Just nothing. We're 600,000 jobs. Poof. The numbers are even greater than what was announced. This has been the worst job loss, I ain't gonna say since the Depression, because I wasn't around. And percentage-wise, you have to be careful about how you spin the numbers. But it's a great deal of people lost their jobs for whatever reason. The housing market is tanked. You got any pocket change? Yeah, let me get them by this mansion for $1.50. Cars? You got the big three automakers begging for money.
Please, please, Congress, give us, you know, $15 billion so we can extend the inevitable doom of the auto industry.
You got all this stuff going on. Jobless rates in California is quite high. Not on a national level, but our jobless rates are still pretty rotten. People are bailing out of their homes. Fires, and if the weather report is any indicator what's to come in the next 7 days, I double guarantee we're going to have floods in California. Double your money back guarantee. We're going to have a whole lot of flooding in California. I bet you between now and Tuesday. If what they say is true, that's coming up the pike, better buy a rowboat now. Fires, potential floods, all kinds of things. And what do people give themselves over to? Nothing. A stupid, worthless holiday where they're going to spend money they claim they don't even have. They don't have a place to stay, but they got money to buy gifts. The priorities of our brains are scrambled. Tell them kids, be quiet. Here's your gift. Here's dinner. That's your gift for today. I want to shut up. You got a roof over your doggone head. And you got clothes on your naked body. You ain't got no job. Go clean your room and be thankful that you got health. We ain't got no money for no doggone thing. Can't barely pay the rent now. And they're going to crowd these stores and spend money they don't have to buy vanity. Which last year's vanity should have been a clear indication that all the years before that, all the things they bought are worthless or the kids don't even want to use them anymore. Well, that was last year. Shut up and use it again. Rap at your doggone self and rap in some new rapping. See, this preacher's, I'm fine. I'm trying to teach you folks something, but you don't want to listen. So turn it off. Somebody will listen. Given over to nothing. Nothingness. You never had it. I had great Christmas celebrations growing up. Great, legendary Christmases. Every little thing, I'd see that airplane in my mind, no matter how old I am, I see it. I could smell the sparks in those Japanese little cheap engines years ago. And he used to run that plane and run it around the house. I thought it was so wonderful. About a week. I see all those toys. The Lincoln Logs and the Etch-a-Sketches and all this stuff. The Erector Sets. We had all that mess. And we just grew up to be a bunch of hoods and thugs and fools. Vanity. No one gave us character for Christmas. How about give your kids the gift of character? Sit them down and teach them something. Oh, they're a big preacher. You're stupid. Okay, whatever. Israel was given over to the, listen, Israel was not only given over to foolishness and nothingness, she was given over to the foolishness and nothingness of the people around her. They were pursuing it, and so was Israel, and so was the church. You think all them people in line, getting mad and cussing, and you know, keying cars and whatnot, are all unbelievers? Please. There's a lot of Christians out there cussing and keying cars and blaspheming folk and what have you. A lot of them out there doing that stuff. Everybody in line grabbing up them bargains, spending that money they ain't got, are just all heathens. People like to blunt reality because, you know, if you have to really do some thinking, you have to really put your brain into motion. A lot of brains are dormant. They haven't been turned on. That switch hasn't been moved for a very long time. Impulse power, Captain, just move. No thinking, no propulsion, no nothing. It's just all just going by impulse, whatever the impulse says. Foolishness and nothingness happens to any nation or any individual or people who decides that they don't need God. What else could happen? Nothingness. They're given over to foolishness. We listen to multitudes that do the church thing, have long ago rejected God, give themselves over to their own or someone else's foolishness to guide them. You would think that the people that have been beat down by foolishness would want to really seek God. But that would be true if you knew him. A beat down people that experience God don't want to be beat down no more. They understand the beauty of having freedom, but they don't want it because they've been given over to themselves. Listen, it's either God or self. Who is in control? It's either God or me. And if it's me, I'm going for whatever satisfies me and my old flesh. That's it. And number 7, lying and deceit. That's what manifested Israel. That's what he says. With a double heart, they do speak. Lying and deceit. Two-faced individuals abounded in Israel and in the church. Many live a very secret and duplicitous life before men. Oh, yeah, it's secret. Oh, to have the freedom of just being who you are. But having to have this dark side. We all have a dark side. You speak for yourself. I like being who I am. Well, I'm going to talk about it. I don't think it's here. But I believe it's coming up either this Sunday or next Sunday. We're going to talk about this honesty business. About this whole duplicitous secret. There's a man who lives a life of danger. A secret agent. We live a secret life, you know. Tired of that. That's the kind of junk I lived in the world. I had one life, then I had this dark side, you know, the secret life that people knew nothing about. But that's not true of the believer. You know, because that kind of life will catch up with you. That stuff you live outside and in secret, you think nobody's watching. It don't matter if nobody sees you. You know how easy it would be for God to have a person, someone you know, or someone who knows you, who knows people you know and many others, to have that person at that particular time seeing you, I don't care where it is, doing something you ain't supposed to be doing. How easy is it for God to put that into motion? Do you think anything's too hard for God? You think there's something you could do in the dark, in another state or city, and God would just bring this right there. It would be nothing for him to do that. Nothing. All because you want to live a secret life. How many times have I seen this year preachers busted with this secret on Sunday? They have that boom shakalaka like a boom. And then their secret life get busted. It's nothing for God to do this. Nothing. Many people live a very secret and duplicitous life before men. They lie with impunity, meaning they lie or they think it a privilege to lie. You know, these people just lie. They don't even... No conscience. They lie with the thought that they will never see judgment or that they are somehow exempt from the chastening or judgment of God. As others who do the same thing, they don't think nothing's going to happen. That's deceit. It's amazing how people in the church just say stuff. And they don't connect it to, if I say something, I don't, that's a lie. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I don't do it, it's a lie. If I say one thing, I mean something else, it's a lie. If I say I love you, brother or sister, but my heart says I hope you die today of a horrible, long, painful death, that's a lie. And God knows it. No one else knows it. He knows it. And he's the one we should be concerned about. If no human knows it. If I say I'm going to treat you right and treat you wrong, that's a lie. It's a deceit. And these are just a few of the comparisons that could be made between the church and Israel that proves to me that David's cry to God is timeless to the righteous man who also sees what so many others who are caught up in the madness do not see. That is the decline or the absence of the righteous man. David said, where are they at? And I say the same thing. Where are they at? Our culture and so-called church in general have accepted lies and hypocrisy as the standard operating procedure for the professing saint. Do we not even bother? We don't even bother to preach against lying anymore. We've accepted it as normal. Why? Because self does. It's all part of the self person. Well, you know, it's natural for you to lie. It's natural if you lie as a Christian because you're just a human being. Everybody's just lying. Not only that, but the evil of not saying and doing right is not soundly rebuked for the wickedness that it is, but it is tolerated and excused away by some perverted twist of the Holy Bible so as not to tinker with their meaningless ego and feelings. It's okay for them to lie. It's all excused away. God forgives you. Listen to how we lie against God. Even the world will lie because it's part of their nature. But believers professing lie even more to a greater degree because they think even though they lie and lie sometimes more and lie sometimes greater than other heathens, well, God will forgive them. So it impels them to lie more because they're skewed views of God. So God, hey, God, you know, well, what did we see in Romans? Didn't we see that same mentality in Romans? Well, you know, if sin glorifies the holiness and righteousness and greatness of God, let's send up a storm. God forbid. If God abounds through my lie, hey, let's give God a reason to abound even greater by lying some more, by living in sin more, by being unrighteous more. If the truth of God's great mercy and redemption is exalted by my lying, well, let's lie. And that's the wrong way to look at it because that's not what it said. And we do it. We are worse than a soft church. We are vapors. We have no substance and apparently don't care about it. The Bible calls all of these people wicked. We don't. So then who's right and who's wrong? God's right forever. We all know who's wrong. Now, I want to talk about this. Just want to read it. Then we'll move on. Just so you that, you know, it's duplicitous in society. The whole idea of lying and deceit and vanity and madness is just alarming to me. And, you know, there are many other things like this I've seen and just dismissed. And I have some saved. I got about 4 or 5 different files of all kinds of things similar to this that Americans are involved in. That this is a great country, but boy, we sure lie. Our vanity and our lying is just legendary. And the same thing with the church. But an article came out, I think it was December 1st. American teens lie, steal, cheat at an alarming rate. Well, no kidding. I'm sure the people that put this together were lying, stealing, and cheating when they were kids too. And I was, and so were all you. And it's bad enough that it happened. But now as a Christian, are we supposed to do the same thing? Lie, cheat, and steal? Well, let's see. Let's read this. American teenagers lie, steal, and cheat more at alarming rates. A study of nearly 30,000 high school students concluded Monday. I've been saying this since the 80s, and the man rebuked me for saying this. and left the church. Left the church because I said something like this. Stupid. Oh, I love you, Pastor Howard. You're a great teacher, blah, 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 blah. Kids lie. You mean old, bad old preacher. I'm going to leave the church. Ushers, open the door. Let the fool depart. The attitudes and conduct of some 29,760 high school students across the U.S. Okay, that's important too. Doesn't bode well for the future when these youngsters become the next generation's politicians and parents, cops and corporate executives and journalists and well, what the world? Look at the ones we got now running the joint. So why do you listen, news people, AP, whatever. Listen, Associated Press or AFP, whatever. The people we have now who are politicians and parents and cops and corporate executives and journalists and generals, etc. Aren't they the biggest bunch of lying, stealing, cheating, hound dogs than the last generation? So all they're doing is watching our example. What y'all crying about? Oh, don't bode well in our country, you know, to become the next generation's politicians and parents and cops and corporate. Well, who do you think the fools are going to jail now? The insanity just lingers. I tell you, this is too easy. This is too easy. Preachers ought to be preaching stuff like this every week. Say, this is too easy. The whole church and the world lost their mind. We all need salvation. The nonprofit Josephson Institute said in its 2008 report card on the ethics of America's youth, they don't know what ethics mean. The LA-based organization said the teenagers' responses to questions about lying, stealing, and cheating reveals entrenched habits rooted in dishonesty for the workforce of the future. Entrenched. It's already taken root. Or for those who can't pronounce root, root. Boys were found to lie and steal more than girls. I don't believe that. It's not in my experience, but I'll defer to the article. Overall, 30% of students admitted to stealing from a store within the past year. A 2% rise from 2006. What do you put on the movies, on the television for these younglings to see? And you put this stuff on sitcoms and children's programs on Saturday, and you make it funny when kids steal. So it becomes acceptable, stupid people. Oh, keep reading. Keep reading, Big Black. Keep reading. More than one-third of boys, 35%, said they had stolen goods compared to 26% of girls. I find it hard. Well, anyway, an overwhelming majority, 83% of 30,000 fools of public school and private religious school students admitted to lying to their parents about something significant. And let me say something about that before I read on. Something significant to me means anything. Okay? Any lie is significant. Read on, preacher. Compared to 78% of those, or for those attending independent non-religious schools. So you're trying to tell them, well, see, that skewed the numbers. But just the fact you can even put private religious school students together with a bunch of public school heathens, and they come up with 83% of these folks lying to their parents about something significant. And let's not, you know, break out the brass band for 78% of independent non-religious schools, you know, lying. Ain't nothing to be all excited about. Oh, well, it's just, we're just 5% less liars than religious and public schools. Yay, whatever. Cheating in school continues to be rampant. And it's getting worse. What do you expect? You put stuff on the tube. that tells them to cheat, that tells them to lie, that tells them it's okay. The internet, their whole website is dedicated to cheating on tests. You can buy test scores, buy grades. Cheating. Amongst those surveyed, 64% said they had cheated on a test. And that was a lie, because they probably cheat on most of them. Compared to 60% in 2006. Now, see, the thing I don't like, they act like this is the hypocrisy. Oh, this is terrible. This is unheard of in the entire culture of our country. We've never had people lie and cheat. Yes, we did. I did. Everybody has. Well, I did. And everybody I went to school with probably did too. Everybody looking at each other's paper. They just didn't get caught. In fact, my dear friend, and Gary Pulofsky, if you're listening, please, first, I'm sorry. And second, let me know if you're listening. He's out in back east. But we are taking some kind of entrance exam. What was those tests way back in high school? Those, not SATs, but some kind of aptitude test. Aptitude test in high school years ago. And Gary turned around and I switched papers with him because I knew he was smarter. So he did my test, I did his. He was a genius. And then when we finished, he didn't lie. I switched them back. So I got his grade, he got mine. So we all was a, what? I was a heathen? I keeps it real. I have my share. I was on this list, but it was just in the 60s and 70s. Little old heathen. Nice little heathen. Pet cats. It was cheating on as many tests I possibly could if I thought I needed to. But I had this fear of God. I was going to get caught, so I stopped. I scared my mama, too. She found out she beat me to tomorrow. Forget that. Anyway, amongst those surveys, 64% said they had cheated on a test compared to 6% in 2006, and 38% said they had done so two or more times. They lying. They know they did it more than that. Despite no significant gender differences, that's boys and girls, for those of you that don't know any different, on exam cheating, students from non-religious independent schools had the lowest cheating rate. That's something to be proud about. 47% compared to 63% of students attending religious schools. And I gave you my reason behind it, because we feel as though God's going to keep on forgiving us, and so it emboldens some to lie more or to do whatever more. I've said many times, grace does not give you a license to sin, but to stop sinning. You read my notes in Romans 6. As bad as these numbers are, it appears they understate the level of dishonesty exhibited by America's youth. Yes! Yes, 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 that's true. Yes, it does. It definitely understates the level of dishonesty, not the level of honesty, but the level of dishonesty among America's heathen youth. Because they are heathen. And some in the church, too. In fact, I've always thought most of them. I've taught enough of them to know. I have taught in Sunday schools in this rotten state of California at every level, except the little tykes. I can't deal with the little ones. But I've taught junior high, high school, teenagers, adults, young adults, old adults, about to be buried adults. I was superintendent in churches. I know there are plenty of them in there. They didn't want to be in the church, let alone be in my class. As bad as these numbers are, it appears they understate the level of dishonesty exhibited by America's youth, the study warned, noting that more than a fourth of the students, listen. So I'm listening. Just tell me, listen, I'm right here. 5 feet in front of you. I can hear you. I can hear you outside probably. The study warned, noting that more than a fourth of the students, 26%, admitted that they had lied on at least one or two of the survey questions. they lie so much, they even lying on the survey. One fourth of them are just a bunch of liars. That's amazing. 15,000 of these heathens were lying on the survey. They admit it. Just imagine the ones who were lying or didn't admit it. just a bunch of stinking liars. Admitted they were lying on the survey about lying. Despite, now listen. Despite these high levels of dishonesty, You ready? These same kids, not their siblings, these same lying, stealing, cheating heathens, religious heathens and none, these same ruffians, okay, have a high self-image when it comes to ethics. First, they have a problem with a self-image, like I've been saying all along. With ethics, you ain't got no ethics if you are lying, cheating, and stealing. What ethics do you think you have? If you had any ethics, you wouldn't be doing this stuff. Listen to this. Same 30,000 heathens, religious and none, 93% of students indicated satisfaction with their own character and ethics. You are lying and a cheating and a stealing, and you satisfied with your own character, being a liar, a cheat, a stealer, a thief. And you said, I'm happy with it. With 77% saying, when it comes to doing what is right, I have to tear this up almost after I read it because it's senseless. With 77% saying that when it comes to doing right, doing what is right, I am better than most people I know. You know, I can't even comment on that. That statement defies even a comment because it's senseless. Here you are, a liar, a cheater, and a thief, and you think you have ethics. And the people you know, you do right, which is, here's the right to them. I do less lying, cheating, and stealing than most people I know. So that makes me righter than them. That's what they say righter because they can't pronounce or figure out what it means. It means I'm more righteous than somebody else who may steal and cheat and lie more than me. That's the new standard of righteousness. If you steal, cheat, and lie less than somebody you know, that means you're righteous. No, you're just a liar, cheat, stealing less, but you're still nothing but a thief, a liar, and a cheater. You got no ethics. I am better than most people I know. End of madness. It's astonishing to, it really is astonishing to me. Astonishing. But, you know, that's where we're at. David said, where is the righteous man? He's scarce. He sure is. And he's even more scarce in a country such as ours. He just finds it just so easy to be vain and to lie and to be deceitful. So easy to do it without any twinge of conscience, no grief, no thought of it. And then these are the same morons that you see on Judge Judy, Judge Mathis, Superior Court, whatever, and a mama, equally a fool, defending him. That's not my son. My son wouldn't do that. Were you there, ma'am? No. Sit your behind down. Okay. Your son had, it's a videotape of your son stealing. There is fingerprint evidence. There is forensic evidence. There is witness evidence. He has the stuff he stole in his possession. And you're going to stand before me and tell me he didn't do it? He didn't do it. Sit your behind down. He didn't do it. Well, who did it? I don't know, but I know my son didn't do it. If you think I'm making this up, you don't know Harley Howard. I've heard this and worse. Every bit of evidence is against this fool. And you're standing there before God, this court, and humanity, and on television, and declaring just how blatantly ignorant you really are. My son didn't do it. All the evidence points to him. No, I don't know who did it, but he didn't do it. And this is the kind of mother raised this kind of moron. A lot of this lie, cheating, and stealing begins at the house. The parents are liars and thieves and what have you. And the children pick up on it. I ain't excusing the kids now, because they're going to give an account too. But they do it. Because just as quick as kids want to pick up on, hear me, in closing, here's my point. Just as kids are quick to pick up on lying, cheating, and stealing from their parents, they are equally running as fast and far away as the righteousness that some parents reveal too. They don't want that. Because lying and cheating and stealing just feeds that nature that's waiting to burst out. So they don't want to be righteous. They want to be lying and cheating and stealing, a sassy and attitude and getting the head going, because that feeds that nature that's already there. But a righteous example, they ain't running after that. Lord, thank you again for showing us just how accurate your word is, as it depicts the church age and humanity in general, and just as it has depicted Israel years ago and how she behaved herself when she dismissed you, to the point where David was crying out to find a righteous man, that he is scarce in the land, and he certainly is today. In the midst of all this religion, in the midst of all this religiosity, even in the evangelical churches, so-called, even with colleges and seminaries pouring out students like water faucets, where are the righteous? Where are they at? Where are the churches that are standing boldly for truth instead of playing stupid games and worried about feelings and giving away prizes and food and music and catering to this stinking flesh? Lord, your word is so true. No wonder we don't want it. We don't want the whole of it. We want our bits and pieces Bibles. Lord, bring forth your judgment on those who are not declaring this truth. Thank you for your mercy this day. Bless the giving. In Jesus' name, amen.